No, fellas, seriously. I was on a flight this week. All right, just happened. Guy next to me pulls out a whole bag of beef jerky on the plane. On the plane.
That's criminal.
I was incensed. I was not thrilled with this gentleman because there's a strong smell with beef jerky.
Oh yeah.
It's
Yeah.
not a good on the plane food. Whatever. He crushes the bag. I'm annoyed. He
As you
crushes the whole
should
bag.
be.
I'm annoyed. Yeah. He breaks out a second bag.
No.
Yeah.
Dude, there's
Can
no
you believe that?
way.
Can you believe that?
How
A second bag of beef jerky.
large was this man?
He wasn't that big. He
Really?
actually wasn't that big.
That's
I mean,
impressive.
we were bumping shoulders, and we had this like, I don't know what it was, but this weird thing where like neither of us was like refusing to budge. Like there was some unspoken mental warfare. Like I'll bump your shoulder, dude. I'm not moving. I'm not moving. So
Bo
he
both of you are
refused
reading
to
your
budge.
copies of Sun Tzu, The Art of War.
No, what? No, he was reading Art of War. You were reading 48 Laws of Power.
Oh,
No,
yeah. I don't
no.
know.
I
I
mean,
feel like the
that's
movie
what we like
ended
to
nicely.
call selfish flying, you know? Because he was being smart,
Textbook.
but he was being selfish smart. He's thinking in his mind, oh, beef jerky, the ultimate plane food. Total convenience, ease of eating, minimal mess. But you
Pure
know what?
protein. Pure
He did not
protein.
think of the smell, which is, if he was
Good food for
unselfish, he
me.
would have thought of. But
Yeah.
he's being selfish.
Dude, honestly, I'm so self-conscious on planes of like being a good flyer that if I bring the bag of beef jerky on the flight and I open it and I smell it, I might be like, I might need to put this away and wait until after the plane. Like, depending on how long it is. I mean, if I'm on a 10-hour flight, I'm gonna probably eat the beef jerky at some point. But I'm gonna be sly about it. I'm gonna be good about it.
How many 10-hour flights have you been on, Aaron?
Zero.
Spence,
How many
he hasn't
flights
been
have you
there.
been on,
He hasn't
Aaron?
been in the trenches. All right, he hasn't been in the trenches.
Six flights in my life.
Six flights your whole life.
My whole life.
Damn.
We got to get you to 16-hour Saudi Arabia flight or something like that, you know, just
Make up
to
for it.
That's a Patreon goal, actually. When we start up a Patreon, if we get to 10,000 user or patrons, I will fly to Saudi Arabia.
Only
Dude,
pays for
mark
the flight though.
only pays for the flight.
You go there and then you come back.
And I
You
come
don't
back.
stay a night. You don't stay a night.
You know what? I would say make him survive for 2 weeks.
No.
No
And
money, no food.
you can't no money and you can't learn the language ahead of time.
Oh,
With
wait.
that's the new
That's
Patreon
literally.
goal.
Little do
You've
you
already
know,
reached
I
it.
already know Arabic fluently.
Assalamu
alaikum.
I was lying.
I was lying.
Hey, Gio, we're both liars. It's okay.
Listen, I know a little bit.
I don't.
I know if I needed to pray with somebody there, I could pray.
I
But
could. Hey, I know the rules. I know a lot about the Muslim religion.
Gio, have you seen the bloopers for This Is the End?
no, not this is the end.
Dude, there's this great blooper where they're going over like what each group member brings. And he's like, and then there's Danny. He speaks Hebrew. Assalamu alaikum. It's such a good joke, dude.
Comedy. Comedy.
I love that movie. That movie, believe it, it's like in my top 50. I love that movie so much.
Really?
It's so good. It's
It
so
is
good.
a it
This
is
is
a
the
very
end.
well-written movie in the context it is written in.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. No question. No question. No question. But fellas, speaking of different languages, am I right?
I'm saying. It's like our
Am I
host
right?
should have thought of that segue, but it's okay.
I'm not gonna lie, your host just got a real bad back spasm. He's
Oh. I
got real tight. I was like,
was wondering why you were leaning over.
that one hurt. That one hurt.
Hey, that's why you
Like,
sit down
oh.
during the podcast. We're professionals.
Hey, he's feeling it, man. Hey, he's past his prime. All
I
right,
will
guys.
say, I will say there was one time where I got like a really bad foot or like foot and leg cramp while on the pod. And like you guys were talking, and I think Spencer, you kicked it to me. And I was like while I'm mid cramp, and I'm like just sitting there trying to let you guys talk and handle it. And I was like, Oh, yep. I think the comment that I made, I was mad at myself while I was editing it because I was like, wow, that was like the worst like thing I could have said. Like what I said was unintelligible. And then you guys went back to like talking about it or talking about the movie. And I was just like, wow, that was pretty funny.
Oh,
and no one knows.
Draws. Find that clip.
That's what I'm saying.
Our number one listener. Love that guy.
Oh, man. Anyway, I'm back. And Gio, you... salient observation. This movie was in a different language. Nothing gets past this guy.
They said we couldn't do it. Gio. They said we couldn't do it. They said we couldn't do it.
They always say we can't do it. But we always do it.
We always find a way. Yes, that's right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 35mm Colonoscopy Podcast, the show we go colon deep with our unfiltered takes on the movies we've been watching. My name is Spencer. As always, I'm joined by my main man, Giovanni. I'm also joined by our other good buddy, Aaron, who, let's face it, is nowhere near as all she talked as I am. It's not even close, dude.
You're kidding, right? Like I'm not kidding.
Honestly?
You're lying. This is insane.
No, it's actually crazy how much Ashitok and I have in common. The more I think about it, I think I've just subconsciously modeled my life after him. Mm. Kind of a crazy feat because I didn't see
the. You've never shot a bow,
but
in your life.
That's, spiritually, I've shot many.
I can't
shoot many bows.
I shoot bows all day, dude. You have
up here.
No idea.
Up here,
dude. Left and right.
It's crazy. This guy could not ride an antelope to save his life, and it's so obvious.
So that's not true. I rode a donkey through the West. That was me.
He didn't do anything. He didn't do anything of the sort.
You've never been on a donkey. Name one time you were on a donkey.
Name one time you've been on a real horse.
It's happened. Can I name a time? I don't think I can.
It's happened so much that I couldn't name
it. I couldn't even name a single one time.
I can't name... You know, I don't recall. You know, excuse me, Your Honor.
How many swords do you own? How many swords?
Define sword.
A blade Aaron, bigger than a chef's knife.
Aaron, I personally think that the pen is mightier than the sword, I have many.
This is crazy.
I guarantee you I have more pens than you have swords. I guarantee you.
Yeah, though that's true.
I guarantee you, and I mean, we've already established that it's mightier, so I'm Ashitaka, and you just need to learn how to deal with that.
I got that demon inside me, is all I'm saying. You don't got that demon.
I got that hate. I got that demon of hate in me.
I hate humans. We're talking Princess Mononoke, okay? All right, we're getting into Miyazaki. First Miyazaki on the pod.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Yes, sir.
Tried to get him, could not get in touch with his people, but by the next movie, we'll make that happen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fellas, we're talking about one of the goats, and you two know so much about him. Aaron, I figured since you chose this movie and you've talked about this gentleman a lot, maybe you kind of take us into Miyazaki a little bit. Who is this guy for those that maybe don't know him?
Yeah, I really don't know the vast history of like Studio Ghibli as much as I would like. I mean, like, you know, I've watched a lot of the movies. I'm a pretty big fan, I'd say. I've watched a fair amount of them. I don't think I've seen all of them at this point. I think I'm missing probably 4 or 5 of the kind of smaller ones. I've seen all the big ones. I've seen, you know, Grave of the Fireflies. I talk about that a lot. We do reference Miyazaki's movies quite often on the pod, especially when we're talking about animation. I think it's such a ingrained thing in animation culture, like even outside of just Japanese animation, because Japanese animation is kind of this like driving force in the like animation world, where and then even on top of that, Miyazaki's films and Studio Ghibli in general is the driving force almost of Japanese animation. They are so insanely popular. It totally blows any like popular anime out of the water. You know, like people talk about like Spirited Away as like kind of the, you know, the like the hole punch into American cinema with the Oscars. Gio, your hand motions for me here are insane. For the audience at home, Gio the whole time is just like punching his fist through. It's making me lose my mind. It's making me lose my train of thought, which is why I'm repeating myself. Anyway, anyways, these are important fucking movies. We're off the rails now. These are important movies. Yeah. Miyazaki is one of the greatest filmmakers of all time, and I say filmmaker and not particularly animation, because he is one of the greatest filmmakers of our. I would say the past generation and this generation. Yeah. We had a movie come out recently, The Boy and the Heron. Excellent film, just excellent. You know, he's still got it, which is the moral of the story. Even after Disney bought out Studio Ghibli, which is unfortunate, let me tell you. You know, sometimes they win, the mouse wins a couple, you know. But hey, we're not talking about Disney's Ghibli. We're talking about Princess Motherfucking Mononoke, one of the best animated films of all time. I would say this and the other animated movie that I brought up on the podcast a long time ago, Fantastic Planet, are probably my two favorite animated movies of all time.
Wow. High praise.
Yeah.
Very. Yeah. Gio, your relationship with Miyazaki and with this film, take us through that.
Yeah. I mean, wow. This goes back. This was actually, I think, my first Miyazaki.
Same here.
I want to say, like, it was pre-2010 somewhere. Still pirating movies days don't come for me. Bring the evidence. Don't deny it.
Track it down.
It's like when it's in that stage, that early stage, we're just kind of watching movies. You're looking up lists. Like, oh, this is on lists. Let me go through these lists. Oh, this is this is the movies that people are watching. Let me watch these movies. And, you know, you have no context for these things, and they sort of live in, like, almost vacuums. You have no strings connecting each one. There's no through lines. You don't know the context of these directors, blah, blah, blah. It's in that era, right, because you're so young. Princess Mononoke and Studio Ghibli. Obviously, you hear about them. This was my first entry into this because, honestly, it just looked cool. Like from the thing.
Totally agree.
This is child brain. This is child brain Geo. All right, it looks sick. It looks sick as fuck. And quite frankly, it was. It was sick as fuck. This was one of those early movies that connected like crazy. Like just like instant. Like like Fantastic Mr. Fox, you know?
Yep.
Instant connection. Instant blow my mind. And it made me want to visit the rest of Miyazaki's work. And Do the Right Thing with Spike Lee were the first two movies that made me want to watch the rest of the director's work. Like, actually, like, made me conscious, oh my God, this, totally like, fair. A director can have their own style, and I want to see whatever else this person has done, because this is amazing. Whatever this style is, I want to see more. And, the rest is history from there. I went through, I think, most of the Ghiblis, and actually I used this pod as an excuse to kind of do another Ghibli run through. I got like halfway through because, you know, school and stuff, so I got all the way up to Spirited Away on this run through. But yeah, I mean, the rest is history, truly. This movie in itself, I owe a lot to. I owe a lot of personal taste to this movie, and it definitely changed my life in unknown ways, like unquantifiable ways. That, you know, like butterfly effect shit, you know, it's like if that one thing didn't happen, a lot would have been different. I'll tell you that much. I'll tell you that. But I wouldn't be here talking to you guys. You know what I mean? I'd be dead.
I think that's a really like kind of good point, Gio. Just because this movie did come out. Does anyone know the year? I can't think of it.
1997.
Right. Like, I mean, this is before Spirited Away, like I said, which was the big driving force, I think, especially because in the 90s, like a lot of Japanese animation, like while it was making its way over to the U.S., there wasn't that huge wave of Japanese animation that we see nowadays where anime is just fucking everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, like, this is, you know, right before Spirited Away. This is, you know, the like it, and to be honest with you, I think that the fact that Spirited Away is that spearhead is a damn shame, because I think damn that's shame. Definitely on the lower echelon of Studio Ghibli movies.
Wow. Okay, I wouldn't have gone that far, but you know,
look, yeah, keep going. I think it's below the half point for sure. I can name probably five better movies than it right now. This one. Okay. This one, Grave of the Fireflies, Kiki's Delivery Service.
You put Kiki's above Spirited Away?
100%.
That's a conversation for another
podcast. Okay, anyway, right. I'll say those three. I don't want to get too into this.
Box here.
Yeah. All right, but anyway, you know, this is just a really important time in Japanese animation for that reason. I forgot what my main point was. But anyway, this is a really important movie, especially for the time. Sorry, I got derailed.
Yeah, I think another movie, another Ghibli movie. You talk Ghibli,
Ghibli. Who cares? We're not Japanese. Right, we're fine.
All right, another Miyazaki film at the very least. You've talked about that. I think in a higher regard, your taste than Spirited Away. Howl's Moving Castle.
Oh, Howl's Moving Castle. Oh. Yeah, there's another one. That's number four.
Huge.
Yeah.
Love Howl's Moving Castle. Case,
yeah. Obviously, I'm a newcomer. I'm still getting into this. So. Getting into this movie specifically, there's so much to love about it, right? I think the two biggest takeaways are, one, he is a master of pure fantasy storytelling. That and the combination of world building, you are transported into whatever story is on the screen. I mean, in a way that it's rare that anybody can do it this good. I'll just say that. It's insane. And this story, it's great. I mean, it's different. It's fun. There's a magic to it. I was engrossed in it because of our delay. I don't remember whose fault it was, but I'm just going to blame Aaron to be safe. Because of the delay that Aaron caused. I got to run through this one twice. Loved it both times. Yeah, this is great. And I want to get into some of the specifics. The first specific thing I wrote down, Gio, you got a thing?
I mean, I was gonna say, I was hoping that we could just take it from the beginning, from that first fucking scene. Like, honestly, this at least for me, I mean, this movie specifically is so different from everything else in the Studio Ghibli library, especially and specifically up until this point, because they were basically like making they definitely don't target kids.
Mm-mm.
I'm gonna say that because that's a misconception. They make human movies, you know, that can apply, you know, that try to understand human condition, so to speak.
Yeah.
But this movie specifically, he from the first scene was trying to say, this shit's different right here. Okay, well, this isn't fucking Kiki's Delivery Service. You know what I mean? No, I'm not. That isn't a shot. But yeah. he's saying. Oh, this isn't fucking Kiki's Delivery Service. All right, I'm gonna show a dude getting beheaded and arms getting chopped off in the first couple scene. I'm gonna show that. Boom. Off the rip. This is something different right here. All right. This is not My Neighbor Totoro. You know what I mean? This is not Castle in the Sky. This isn't Sweet. All right. We're in a new realm here from the get go.
Yeah, the first 15 minutes has more violence than I think their entire library up to this point. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And gruesome violence, too. Like Gio said, like, this movie does not hold back in that regard. Yeah. It is gruesome. The man's arms get cut off by a bow shot.
Dude,
like, that's gruesome. Yeah. Especially, like, for... I think that is a big misconception, especially with Disney buying Studio Ghibli, is that these are movies specifically aimed at children. They are not. Like, you can listen to Miyazaki talk about any of his movies. He does not talk about them in the context of children watching them. I think, save for Ponyo, which I think he did mention was a little bit more kid-friendly because of... With that movie, that was his first one after the Disney purchase. And that one, I think he was, like, a little more... Or they were a little more conscious of the fact that they were owned by Disney at this point.
I think for me, the first, like, obviously it's a strong start. The first scene in the movie where I lean back, I'm like, whoa. The montage of him when he first leaves his village.
Yeah.
I mean, that is just, it is tranquil. It is serene. It is like, I can't even describe the emotions it was able to conjure for me. And I feel like, just by Gio's expression, he's reliving it right now, and I'm happy for him. Like, look, you look like you're spiritual.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's one of those scenes that can get you to, you know, that Matthew McConaughey meme where he's like smoking and it's like, it's like that, but like in a good way. And like, that's one of those scenes that just makes you sit back and just go like, fuck this guy. This, you know what I mean? It's one of those ones that's just like, damn. Yeah. He knows what he's fucking doing.
Right. No, he does. And I think that's one of the things, like I said at the beginning of the pod, I mean, he is an expert filmmaker. One thing that I've always loved about these movies, and Spencer touched on it very briefly, is the way that he's able to engross you in a world and build this world out to a point where you feel like you could like go there right now. You know, his ability to do that is next level. A lot of these, like, you know, you think about like the modern idea of that, of building up a world with so much content to the point where you like you have no choice but to feel like engrossed in it. These are, you know, 2 hour long movies at the most. I think this is like one of the longest ones, Princess Mononoke. Yeah. Okay. I think it either is the longest one or it's the second longest one.
I think at least Boy and the Heron, I think, beats it.
Yeah, you're right. Boy and the Heron does beat it. I think.
Oh, it doesn't?
It doesn't?
I forgot.
Boy and the Heron was 2 hours 4, and this is 2 hours 14.
Okay. Regardless, still one of the longer ones. Mm-hmm. He usually like sticks between the 2 hours to, you know, 1:45 kind of deal. Yeah. At least for the newer stuff. But you know, like, he's able to do and build these worlds out in that short of time. It's so impressive. It shows you the level of artistry. I believe it was this movie. Crucify me if I'm wrong. But I believe it was this movie. Miyazaki looked at the movie when it was pretty much close to done, and he was like, yeah, I don't like it. I don't like the art. I'm redrawing everything. And he redrew every single still from this movie. If I'm not mistaken. Wow. Or at least redrew like the cells that they were using. If I'm not mistaken, that's this movie. I know it was one of them, but I'm pretty positive it was this one. This movie, dude, like it looks so beautiful. Like everything. Mm-hmm. It really just the same thing with the other movie that we recorded recently, Asteroid City, where I said that you could literally pick any of the stills out. But in this one especially, you could pick any of the stills out and you could hang them on your wall and they'd look awesome. Yeah. Like any scene from this movie would just look incredible.
No. Yeah. You said it. And it's not just the visuals, because that was already established by this time, Ghibli. This was kind of him taking it to another level. Like, he's always implemented his own personal philosophy in his films before this and after this. That's just the type of filmmaker he is. But with this one especially, he was really just like, he was going for it. I wouldn't actually be surprised if this is the one that he went back and did everything after seeing the movie. Because I know at least this was a really personal one for him, at least at the time. He's had even more personal ones like post this. Already Boy and the Heron is, I'm sure, there. And The Wind Rises, I know that was the only one.
I mean, every single one is personal, you know? Like,
yeah, to an extent. In a way. He's putting his essence in there.
Yeah.
So for this, I can... It sounds extreme because of the level he's already at. Mm-hmm. But considering that level, I wouldn't be surprised him going back on this and saying, you know what? No, I know what I'm trying to do here. This is not to the level that I want it to be.
Yeah.
I know. You know what I mean? Because he demands that every day with his animators anyways. I don't know if you guys have seen any of the documentaries that they have on him. Oh, incredible. If you guys have time, do so. It's really interesting stuff. And he's a sweetheart of a man. But he is incredibly passionate about life while also being a little bit like depressed. He's manic depressive diagnosed. And so he has like these kind of like semi-depressing thoughts that just come out randomly. But he has just an extreme eye and passion and joy for life and just living it and wanting people to live it, that it just comes out. It just flows out in the movies, not just in the visuals, with the story in itself. And that's what takes it to that upper echelon, upper level.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. I even just from the start, like, not only with the initial boar scene, but those scenes with the first village, Ashitaka's village, mm-hmm. right? Those were so, like, I don't know. They gave, like, such a spiritual vibe, obviously, because, like, you know, it's like the old lady, right, blah, 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 you know, and stuff. But you felt so much. You felt so much, and you could almost, in so much was implied. So much didn't need to be said about these characters. With so much didn't need to be said, but you understood so much about the characters with just, like, those couple scenes, those couple shots that they had. Not even Ashitaka, like the rest. You got a feel for that village and what they've been through. And, like, that little girl. That was, like, its own thing. And he didn't need to say any of it. That's incredible for me. That's when you're on a different level. Especially in something like animation. Like you said, like, this is already so beautiful. And it's so technical. I mean, it takes so long to do. And to do it, like, on this scale and for this long. Like, 2 hours, 6 minutes is a reason that they don't do animated movies too long. You know what I mean? Because everything's hand-drawn.
Oh, of course.
You know? But I digress.
Yeah, it just shows you the level of, like, what 2D animation can do, you know? It really just... And it just shows you what animation can do in general. Because, you know, this is, like, turn-of-the-century stuff. Like, you know, we're getting into the point where we're getting, like, you know, crazier and crazier CGI, and, you know, people are freaking out about that. But these people are making a better movie than all of those in an art form that has been around since the 1920s.
Dawn of cinema.
Yeah, the Dawn of cinema. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we've touched pretty heavily on the visuals. Let's get into the story elements of Mononoke specifically. They do such a good job of creating a story that just has a spiritual essence to it, and is, in addition to a kind of conveying these messages, incredibly engrossing to watch. You are just, like, super locked into these characters and their journeys. Where the story is going, the world in which it's taking place, and it does, like, this is all foreign, all of this, like, none of this is based in reality, and yet you feel so connected to it in a way that I feel like there's not very many directors or films that get that accomplished, and he does it here. I was locked in. The sprites, I was all on the sprites. Adorable.
Come on.
The Nightwalker was sick. The wolves were sick. Like, they're just, they're awesome, dude. Right? Yeah. I mean, that Nightwalker was so cool.
Yeah. I totally agree. And all, I mean, every single, like, character design. I mean, if you want to talk character design, we could be here forever with, you know, Miyazaki movies.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, just the design of, like, the simple little, like Spencer said, what are they called? The tree spirits or sprites or whatever they are.
Kodama?
Just the little guys. They're so cute.
Yeah.
They're just little guys, you know?
Yeah. No. Yeah, and it's because, again, that this goes to, like, the level of passion and just, like, heart that's coming in from this, because that's all pulling from Japanese lore, Japanese, like, spirits, like, spirit mythology and stuff, like the Kodama, that's, like, a real thing. Same with the wolves, or, like, the spirits of the wolves, that comes from, you know, mythology, at least, like, Japanese mythology.
Yeah.
Like you said, like, especially and specifically with this one, he ingrains so much spiritual depth within the story that is palpable. I mean, it is palpable in every single scene. There is so much depth, so much heart, and so much, I don't know, I guess humanity, for lack of a better term, because it's not just the spirituality. It's like, even by the time he gets to Irontown, right?
Mm.
Those interactions that he has with the villagers, so much, like, I guess not happens, but, like, is said and is felt. You know what I mean? Like, you discover so much about this little town. You know what I mean? Because, like, it could, in the hands of another, I guess, director or another studio, whatever, what have you, this could have easily been boiled down to something as oversimplistic as, like, human bad, you know, over, you know, nature good, right? You know, like,
it would have boiled down to Avatar, the blue people.
Yeah, no, but where Miyazaki comes in and where it comes into that upper echelon is the fact that there isn't almost any antagonist, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's just, it's almost like there's just this problem and there's two sides to it. That there's two different views.
There's more than two sides. What this is perfect storytelling. Uh-huh. You are watching every single character in this story. You can empathize with their goal and their objective.
Yeah.
Every character here and what they are fighting for has purpose. They are complex. They are dynamic. They are good and they are bad. And you understand why they're fighting for what they're fighting for. And you're watching all these groups go at it. That is so hard to create. That is so hard to create. Yeah. And you're looking at the master of it right here.
Yeah.
And in this movie, it's perfected. It's truly perfected.
Truly.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about the script, really. I mean, we talked about, like, story elements, but the script is...
It's perfect.
Yeah. It's literally perfect. It's, like, kind of a concept that we talked about kind of recently with a comedy movie is the idea of a perfect joke in that Hitchcock movie, The Lady Vanishes.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about that concept where it's, like, zero fat... But, you know, like, you take one word out of the joke. You take one scene out of this movie and, you know, you could probably take a scene. But, I mean, if you took a scene, like, it just wouldn't be as good. It wouldn't be the movie that we know and love. And I think that's what's so impressive about his movies. It really is.
Everything serves a purpose. Every line serves a purpose. Like you said, every scene, every line, every interaction in Irontown serves a purpose. Like, you're getting the backstory, you're getting the story of these people's lives, and then you hear Lady Eboshi's side of it, you know, and then you see, like, this back room that she has where she's caring for these lepers, you know what I mean? Like, that's like a whole nother dimension, because, like, you, their first interaction you saw was like, oh, she was fighting these wolves, oh, human bad, right? Like, that's what you're seeing, like, this lady's evil, blah, blah, blah. No, you're seeing, like, the depth, like you said, you see the many sides, the many layers of all these people on top of the nature side. Like, every scene that happened in the forest, oh, my God, I wish I could live there. Like, I wish I could fucking live there. And I guess, the wolf side of it, then there's, like, the whole ape tribe, you know what I mean? The boar is coming in. Every little, like, thing that they each said added a whole another thing to this story to round it all out. It's like adding another piece to the puzzle. You know, that might be a cliche, but truly, like you said, like, you, I guess you could take something out of it, right? But then you're missing a piece, right? There's something that each thing adds, each little line, each little scene, each little character, each little nuance that adds to this story and adds to the pushing of this message, whatever they're trying to convey.
What's kind of cool is, to your point, Gio, about, like, the you know, the Japanese mythology and stuff like that, it almost adds in humans as, like, an element to it. Because obviously this stuff is written in the context of, like, you know, building up the world up until humanity's existence and stuff. That's kind of what mythology does. But it kind of takes that mythology and then adds in humans as a tribe. Because if you think of the humans as a tribe, just like the boars or the apes or the wolves, you know, the movie takes on a different thing, because the apes are, you know, kind of in some context fighting the wolves or the boars because they don't believe the same things. And the humans are the same way, where, you know, they don't believe in the same things as the wolves and these other things. They think if they kill the tree spirit, then all these other things will happen. But yeah. It's very interesting.
Dude, I'm liking this movie more as I talk about it.
Right?
Like, I liked it when I watched it, and then the more I analyze it, the more I'm like,
I'm telling you, dude.
This is just great. But yeah, I mean, we talked about the visuals of it, which, you know, are the cinematography of this movie is the visuals. So Aaron, I mean, just bountiful of options here to choose from.
Just so many.
Yeah. Where are we going with the slap shot?
Let me send it to you, but I'll talk about it while I'm sending it to you. I don't know why I don't do this, like, beforehand.
Please do. I'm a fool. You know.
So some would say it's unprofessional, but I wouldn't.
some people named
what was his name again? he likes drawing. I don't know. Anyway.
Ian draws. Come on. Loyal fan.
But anyway, so I sent it to you guys. So I just love the nature scenes of this movie. I think it's just so... I literally had so much fun watching this movie again. Because, again, I hadn't seen it in probably like 2 years at this point. I just forgot how beautiful the visuals are in this movie in particular. It's a little cliche when it comes to Miyazaki movies and Ghibli movies, but it's so good. It's just a nice shot of the tree sprites blowing in the wind. All the guys just hanging out, having a good time. It's kind of at, like, one of the lower points of the movie, you know, like, they're getting back, they're healing, they're licking their wounds for the wolf analogy. But yeah, it's just, like, these scenes that are stitched together with such amazing visuals that, like, you're happy to even seeing the stitching of this movie. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you said, this guy's just a master of his craft. Like, tying in the character design with that, I mean, it's almost like a gradual buildup that's going on. Like, a bunch of little hills is almost like how I like to say it. Like, you know, speaking about the first battle scene that you see with, like, Lady Eboshi and those guys fall into the river, and then Ashitaka is, like, finds those guys, and he, like, you know, brings them on. That's you've already gone through, like, the whole first scene with the village and, like, the whole first boss scene, him getting banned or him having to leave the village and go on this quest, and then that little scene or that little fight scene, the skirmish with the wolves, and exactly how that played out. Then it leads you slowly into this nature world. You see the first Kodama, right? You see a couple more, right? And then they go through the forest, you get a couple visuals there, blah, 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 but you're not getting a full picture. And then they lead you into that little, like, pond area, that, like, that heart of the forest, so to speak, right? And, you know, there's, like, a couple little extra things. The score is crescendoing, right? We didn't even talk about the score. Get into that after. It's crescendoing, and then on top of, like, the healing things that are happening, like, oh, you're taking in, you're ingesting the scene, you see the golden thing coming, the golden light coming through those trees, coming through the forest line with those deer coming, going through. That's an amazing visual already. And then you see this, like, crazy god thing. And then that is only, like, a shadow, and that comes in later, blah, blah. And then you get that character design, how that character walks with, like, all the growing things. It's like a gradual build of these scenes, of these visuals, that just adds to the effect of it, so to speak. Like, I don't know how to explain that, but it's all playing into each other, and that delicate balance is really just incredible. I mean, it's awe-inspiring, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, like, the role of a director in a movie, and especially an animated movie, is to tie things together, right? I mean, you have a cinematographer, you have a, you know, an editor, all these different positions for a reason. And you, as the director, your job is to tie all this, like, you know, all of these expert talents together. And I think that in animation, you could argue whether it's easier or harder. But I think that regardless, something you can't argue against is that Miyazaki is an expert at it, of bringing all these different aspects together and just folding them into the most perfect craft that it possibly could be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And fellas, before we get into our final thoughts on Princess Mononoke, for you two specifically, real quick, hit me with your top three Miyazaki.
Okay.
Come on.
You go first, Shio. You go first.
If we're only speaking on Miyazaki, then it would have to be Princess Mononoke, number one for me. Okay. Spirited Away, number two.
Okay.
And then I think as a third, I'll go. It's a tie between Nausicaä Valley of the Wind and Porco Rosso, because I love Porco Rosso. And I think it's really underappreciated. I love the vibes coming out of it. I love really everything about it. But Nausicaä has such, like, it has a special place, I guess, in my journey and in my, like, I don't know, just, like, it has a special place in my Miyazaki / Studio Ghibli list. But honestly, I need to live with Boy and the Heron a little bit more. I can see that, like, making its way up. I can see that's another one of those that, like, you know, this is kind of speaking to me a little bit here. But we need to give that time, of course, as of now, that's kind of like my tentative top.
Okay. All right. Aaron?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be Howl's Moving Castle, Princess Mononoke, and Grave of the Fireflies, I think. To get the depression.
That wasn't a Miyazaki.
Was that not Miyazaki? Oh, really?
That was not a Miyazaki.
That was just straight up Studio Ghibli. Oh, hey. Shows
yeah,
what I
think it was. It wasn't Isao Takahata. I think it was someone else, right? I forgot who was it. Takahata? Oh God,
that's gonna bother me. All I know is that Ian Draw is just furious right now.
We're failing him actually right now. As a matter
he's of punching fact. Holes in the wall. Way to go, Aaron.
Isao Takahata. It was Isao Takahata.
Okay.
He's the other Studio Ghibli master.
Third one then is kind of a little bit harder for me. Like I said, I got to live with Boy and the Heron a little bit more. I mean, probably Kiki's Delivery Service then, but I could absolutely see with time it being Boy and the Heron.
Yeah.
right. Well, let's wrap it up here. Princess Mononoke. This was an Aaron choice. Aaron, I'm very glad you chose it. You know, I have a lot more work to do on Mr. Miyazaki, but I'm going to make it happen. All right? Yep. I'm going to make it happen. And for this movie in particular, sensational. Sensational. Just a riveting story. Really gripping. Different, unique. Just like spiritual, and it moves you in a way that is just so hard to do. And it gives off just this great energy. It's a movie that just makes you feel a certain way with the way it's presented. I loved it. I did think it was a little bit too long, like coming at 2:15. I probably would shorten it a little bit. But at the same time, like Aaron brings it up, I don't know what I would take out. You know? I don't know what I would take out. But yeah, the more we talked about it, the more I was like, this is just great. It comes in at a 9 out of 10 for me.
Wow.
Insane. Yeah. Insane. Yeah. I could talk about this fucking thing for hours. I'm not even going to lie. Like, I feel like we didn't even scratch the surface.
No, I agree.
There's so much to talk about here. It's crazy. But like you said, I mean, everything about this is just utter perfection. You know, I mean, we didn't even talk about the score, which is such a fucking banger. Yeah. I mean, that flute motif. I know you guys were feeling it.
Oh, like, yeah.
The little flute motif that came every now and then. Jesus. I mean, and on top of the actual message of the film, which is what struck, you know, baby Gio so long ago, so many years ago.
Yep.
You know, see with eyes unclouded, you know, we can't change our fate, but we can rise to meet it. All of the above, right? You know, this, again, is just one of those ones for me that has done so much. Intangibles, as we say in sports. It's got the intangibles, right? On top of the batting average and
everything else.
It's got everything. But yeah, this is a 10 out of 10 for me. I mean, there's just no question about it. It's a 10 out of 10. I think it's like number 17 on my list.
That sounds about all time. Is this below Cat in the Hat?
It actually is. Yeah, that's
crazy. It is.
All right.
Got to do the litmus test.
Yeah. the Cat in the Hat's the litmus test.
How much does he really like it?
Yeah.
All right, Aaron.
Oh. Well, what can I say, man, that hasn't already been said? This movie, again, to mirror what Gio said, it's just a very important one for me. It was one of those early films that I watched when I started getting in and watching movies, like, critically. It's just so good. I'm going to keep it short here. I've said all I need to say on it. Just a legendary movie. I really want a gazelle as a pet. Is the moral.
Nice.
Anyway, I am more Ashitaka. I don't want to hear it. Anyway, this is 10 out of 10.
I figured. All right. Well, thank you for listening, everybody. We hope you enjoyed it. Till the next time, I'm Spencer.
I'm Aaron.
I'm Gio.
And this has been the 35mm Colonoscopy Podcast, telling you that if you watched this in Japanese, you missed out on Rosie Perez in the dub. She was there. I heard it. I didn't love it. It happened. And make sure you join us next week for Asteroid City.